Everybody wants to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep it love. I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Welcome to Watching the Throne,
where we talk everything Kanye West.
I'm Chris Lambert.
And I'm Travis Bean, and we have a very special episode today. We have a guest.
Yeah, it's another entry into our interview series called My Story, where we interview people about their relationship with Kanye West.
Yeah. Before we get to him, we have to give a shout out to Jordan C. Johnson, our first My Story guest. He made a new intro song for us, and we forgot to credit him last episode, so... Now
yeah,
it's us making up for that.
And we used his music and didn't thank him.
And told him, fuck off.
Yeah, that's just how we roll. So today we have Joshua Chaplinsky. He's the author of Kanye West Reanimator and the managing editor of Lit Reactor. Thanks for joining us, Josh.
Thank you, guys.
So before we get to all the interview questions, we're going to do a little bit about Jay-Z news, since the rest of our interview is going to focus so much on Kanye.
Right, and we can't forget about Jay-Z.
No, it is called Watching the Throne, after all. So,
yes.
Travis, what news do you have?
Jay-Z, he was going to have a party last Friday night at his house, but a bat got in, and he spent a better part of the night. He had to cancel everything. He had to tell everyone to go home. They kept showing up the door. He's like, I'm sorry, like I have to get this bat out of the house. And he spent pretty much the entire night getting it out. He tried everything. He tried trapping it in his laundry basket. He tried whacking up the tennis racket, and it just got back up. And then finally, it just left on its own.
Man, that sounds... I like picturing him with, like, a fencing mask on and, like,
right.
The broom just running around.
Were you there? That all happened.
No.
He tried literally everything he had at his house.
That's... Well, I'm glad Jay-Z was successful.
Yes.
My news is that I guess it was after he got the bat out, he needed some relaxation. He went up to upstate New York to see some of the changing foliage.
Right.
But tragedy struck. See, he built a big pile of leaves and jumped onto it thinking it would be like diving onto a pile of pillows. But that wasn't the case. He sprained his wrist. So it just wasn't a great weekend, it sounds like, for Jay-Z.
You know what? I've noticed a trend. My Jay-Z news are typically domestic issues, and your Jay-Z news are very tragic endings and injuries.
Well, it's not always easy. This is real life.
Right.
Josh, do you happen to have any Jay-Z news?
I do, in fact. And, I mean, continuing the trend, it just seems like it has not been Jay-Z's week. Reportedly, he fell prey to the dreaded Home Depot identity theft scam
that's
happened to so many of us, you know. Home Depot's a big store, a lot of people in and out. They got the self-checkout, a lot of credit card numbers, and
right.
It's really easy for people to steal your credit card number and steal your identity. And it happened to him. He was there buying a new weed whacker because his old one broke. Because
right.
he gets a little too close to the fence, you know, when he's using it, and it just dulls the wick or whatever you call it, the little piece that cuts the grass. So he was in Home Depot, just like a regular guy like the rest of us,
right.
Buying a new weed whacker, got his credit card info stolen, and then a couple days later, he got a call from his bank saying that there were a lot of suspicious charges coming out of Maryland for some odd reason. $237 at a local Taco Bell, a couple other AT&T bills being paid.
Wow.
Some overdue library books. It was just really, you know, good on the bank. They realized right away these were not Jay-Z type charges,
right.
And they were able to credit his account and you know, put a hold on the car. So
yeah, I think this
good.
Person missed a real opportunity to buy more extravagant things with Jay-Z's bank account.
Yeah, I mean, it seems they didn't know what they had, you know.
I guess not. I guess they I mean, I assume it says Jay-Z on his card. I would think they would just know, but I guess not. Maybe they don't know who Jay-Z is.
Yeah.
I like to think that the person probably had all that Taco Bell and just couldn't do anything else.
Like, it just, like, weighed him down and he couldn't move?
Yeah. I'm sure at some point we'll see hospital charges trying to show up.
And then the police will zero in and they'll have their man.
Yeah. Well, God, that's some great news. Thanks for thanks
for
digging
that up, Josh.
That was
probably the best round of Jay-Z news we've ever had.
Yeah, that was very, very exciting.
Well, very thank Jay-Z for living an exciting life.
Right? This is what it means to be a celebrity. You gotta share. You gotta share.
Well, exactly.
So now we're gonna get into, Josh, your story, eh? Which is
very good.
So we're going to start with, before embarking on the novella writing, Kanye West Reanimator, what was your relationship with Kanye and Kanye's music?
Basically, I didn't really have one. Like a lot of people probably my age, I kind of, you know, written Kanye West off as young people's music, and I just was aware of his public persona and thought he was kind of a jackass, you know? My personal taste in hip-hop kind of end is the year 1994 or so. Anything after that, you know, it's kids music.
Right.
But, so yeah, I mean, I just knew his public persona and frankly didn't really like him. He seems like kind of a jerk. Kind of a, you know.
So have you listened to his music now?
A little bit. I listened to, you know, in my research for the book, I listened to specific songs that, you know, when I needed to, that I thought would tie in with the story or I wanted to quote lyrics or stuff like that. So, my story, yeah. I gotta say, I mean, again, it's not really my thing.
Mm-hmm.
As far as hip hop goes, I do like that song Power, though. It's got the King Crimson sample in there, and it's kind of something different going on. It's got some like tribal drums. I definitely dig that one. So
yeah, it's pretty undeniably great. Yeah.
Yeah. So if there's more like that, I can, you know, maybe I'll check it out. See what I'm missing.
Maybe we should make like a little Kanye West sampler for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are the Watching the Throne approved Kanye songs, and we just send you all of his albums.
You just send me everything.
Yeah.
We just cut out Breathe In, Breathe Out and just give him the rest of the songs.
Oh, God, that song. Yeah.
Well, I do know, too, that song Bound 2 was just, I thought it was ridiculously bad, and then the video was even worse. I mean, I kind of feel like maybe it was some sort of self-deprecating joke or something, but... Oh, and then that, whatever he did with Paul McCartney, though, that was just awful. With the auto-tune singing.
Oh, I remember Chris and I listened to that together for the first time. We were kind of like jaw-dropped staring at each other.
I mean,
we couldn't believe like how bad it was.
Is an embarrassment for both of them. Like, and anyone who listens to it.
I'm on board with Paul McCartney and Kanye West doing songs together. I think, and you know what, I even like, I love Kanye's voice, actually. I like what he does. I can't get on board with the lyrics, though.
Oh, yeah, the lyrics are so bad. And just, like, the auto-tune, like, I'm,
Oh, yeah, I'm into it, but I know Chris is into it. His one of his favorite albums is all auto-tuned.
The 808s and Heartbreak?
Yeah, 808s.
Which I like, I don't necessarily like auto-tune. I just like what it's capturing on that album in terms of like the emotionscape that he was like trying to form.
Mm.
Right.
But it's funny to me that he then, because he was big on the production aspect of Jay-Z's Blueprint 3, which had Death of Auto-Tune.
Yeah, that is mentioned in my book that came across in my research.
It is, building up to the climactic finale of your book.
Yeah.
It
always caused a rift between Kanye and Jay-Z, the fact that, you know, Jay-Z wrote that song Death of Auto-Tune, and before that, the two of them had a collaboration that was supposed to wind up on that album, which featured auto-tune vocals. But then Jay-Z figured, you know, oh, well, since I got the whole Death of Auto-Tune thing going on, you know, this track isn't really good for the album. And Jay-Z never got over that slight.
Right.
I mean, Kanye never got over that slight.
Well, of course.
You know, one of the things that really fascinated me about your book is that since Watch the Throne came out, I've really been fascinated by the idea that Kanye West and Jay-Z have had like a huge rift in their relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I thought it was cool that your book investigated that a little bit, or at least used that idea as a formation and building up to the finale.
Yeah, I mean, I use that idea as fodder, but I mean, it definitely came from things I read online and in the tabloids that there was this perceived, you know, tiff between the two of them, and everyone was scrutinizing every little thing Kanye said at his shows, and they were like, oh, this line in this song was a slight against Jay-Z, and I mean, it was probably more in people's mind than anything, but
yeah,
it was perfect, you know, fodder for conflict between the two of them in the story.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, did anything really surprise you as you were researching, for good or bad, whether it made you like think Kanye was worse than what you thought or maybe a little better?
No, not really. I mean, most of my research was like biological data and like the timeline of his career and like, you know, from his college days to where he is now. And then the rest of it was mostly musical, and any kind of like personal stuff was, you know, drawn from the tabloids, because obviously that's going to, you know, be funnier to incorporate. Yeah. And I mean, who really knows who Kanye is? I mean, he's got so many different faces he presents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one could ever truly know who that man is.
I think a lot of, personally though, there's probably a lot of your opinions coming out of it, because you do kind of like, there's a slight against 808s and Heartbreaks, like, and people today have kind of embraced that album actually and realized how influential it was. So for you, was that kind of a, like, this album sucks and like...
Well, I mean, first of all, influential on who?
I would say Drake,
yeah.
XX,
Drake's another one who I don't view him very highly. I don't even think, I mean, does that guy, is he actually a musician, or is he just, I think he's just a meme as far as I'm concerned. I see him on the internet in like 7-second bursts. I don't know.
I'm big on Drake, so we can get into that.
I mean, I don't really know that much. And I don't know that much about, 808s and Heartbreak. I probably just heard one or two songs, so I don't really know what I'm talking about. But I did... I guess in that respect, my opinion, based on what it is present in the book, where I kind of like, I take some digs at 808 and Heartbreak, and obviously I'm kind of making fun of Kanye's persona and
right.
his like his egomania and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
but,
I
didn't want to go too overboard with it and make it seem like I was writing like a hate book, you know.
Yeah, I didn't get that feeling. I was just wondering where the line was, because you mentioned that a lot of the information you get is from like these articles you read online. And I know like kind of when 808s came out, it was treated as a joke. I guess like these days, I just don't see it anymore. So I was just wondering where that line was.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think it comes off as hateful or anything. I thought it was kind of funny. It had me like giggling sometimes. Like it was just because like I love Kanye and I know that there's like this perception about him, and like this book kind of like accentuates that and everything. So like,
yeah, and you kind of like love him, you know, for everything he is, the good and the bad, you know. So some mm-hmm. people love his craziness, like that's a big draw for some people, like his, you know, just the wackiness of Kanye West. So
yeah, and
sure.
I think that's for Kanye fans or people that hate Kanye, I think the book has appeal to either team.
Totally.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
for people that love Kanye, there are like a lot of funny things. Like the whole Dame section was pretty hilarious.
That was awesome.
To me. And so there's all these little things where it's like sort of humor for Kanye like heads. But then for people that want to get some like Kanye lampooning out of it, there are lines like the 808 one, like the Kardashian one, like the commentary on Only One that's going to really like appeal to the people that are picking this up to get some of that like smark towards Kanye.
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad that
right.
came across, because I was definitely trying to, you know, find a balance and write something that people who dislike him could enjoy than people who like him could enjoy. I wanted it to appeal to, you know, hip hop fans, to horror fans. So that's good to hear.
Should we cover, we didn't do this, should we cover what the book's actually about?
Oh, yeah, maybe that helps
just
the stage.
Sure. We can give a quick rundown. I mean, basically, it's a reimagining of H.P. Lovecraft's short story, Herbert West Reanimator, which was kind of serialized in, like, I don't know, like the 1910s or something, in six sections. And I just basically took that and reimagined it with Kanye West as the main character, basically because, I mean, it was kind of like an associative thing. It was like Herbert West, Kanye West, Herbert West, Kanye West. Like, it just popped into my head. And I was just like, oh, that needs to be written.
Why not?
That seems like something the internet would enjoy. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, it started out where it was more kind of a joke, and I was just going to, as an exercise, replace every time it said Herbert West, just change it to Kanye West and see how that worked. But I found as I went along that it sounds weird, but I found a lot of similarities between the two characters, how they're both kind of like outcast for their genius and they feel everyone's against them and they're trying to do this great work that nobody else understands.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw a lot of parallels between the two characters, and then I just started applying a lot of, you know, I started doing some research and kind of tailoring the story to Kanye West's life, and it really kind of became its own thing, to whereas I wound up rewriting at least 50%, if not more, of it.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Yeah, which is way, way more than, I mean, it's not like a long book. It clocks in at, what, 71 pages?
Yeah, I think it's like, it depends on the Kindle or whatever, but it's like around 80, 90 pages. It's essentially a longer short story,
right?
You know,
right.
But
I adhere to the structure of the original story,
mm-hmm,
pretty closely, but it's just a lot of added detail, you know, that I think really kind of makes it its own thing.
Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely. Because it did. It felt familiar, but then it also, as somebody that took like a Gothic literature class, really did have the voice of those classic Gothic like tales, which was entertaining.
Yeah, it's an interesting mix.
And I agree. Like, as soon as I saw on Facebook, like, a bunch of the bizarro writers starting to post it and be like, this thing's happening, I got so happy. Like, I'm glad that somebody, I'm glad somebody did this. Like, it needed to exist.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. It's after I got the idea, I kind of ran it by my wife, who I like, you know, she's like the first to read like the first draft of all my stories and stuff like that. And she's, you know, really supportive and actually enjoys reading my stuff. But when I ran this idea by her, she was kind of like, I don't know. And that maybe that drove me even more to want to do it.
Well,
I'll
show you. This is good.
Yeah.
All we need to do
this
now is get the Kanye West Reanimator movie going.
Oh, man. Yeah.
You could get
insane.
What, you could get Jay Farrow to play Kanye?
Or Kanye.
Yeah.
Or
I mean,
Kanye.
It
I don't think it would be. I don't think you could have anyone else.
I know. I mean, I feel like if he was made aware of the book and he actually read what's in it, he would probably be angry. But at the same time, I don't think he would want anyone to play him but him. And he would feel that he had to play himself.
I 100% agree.
Yeah, he's in that catch-22.
Yeah. He's like, this guy wrote this story and says that I killed my mother so I could raise her from the dead, and I want to punch him in the face, but I can't stand the thought of someone else being me. So I'm just going to have to bite the bullet and be in this movie and produce it. And probably direct it, you know? Who knows?
I just have such a huge smile on my face right now, imagining the world that we would live in if that was a thing.
I'm picturing like an Eddie Murphy scenario where he just plays every part in the movie.
Oh yeah, that would be fantastic. I mean, he could do every job on set. He'd be the director, the cinematographer, you know, he'll do all the lighting, set decorating. Because I don't think anyone else would want to be on that set. You know, the finished product might be amazing, but it would probably be a nightmare.
I'd love to watch it from like a hidden camera or something. Like, yeah. I don't know if I'd want to be anywhere near it.
Like a reality show.
He's a perfectionist and wants like real dead bodies on set.
Yeah, of course. Everything's gotta be real.
It's funny. I think legitimately, I want Kanye to act more because he's in the Robert Rodriguez commercial for Nike or Adidas or something.
Okay.
And he plays the villain, and I think he's really great. It's almost in the style of Reanimator, where it's a little campy and like the movie anyway, and it's kind of overdone, and I find it very enjoyable, so I'm fully on board with this.
Yeah, I'm surprised he hasn't stepped out into more acting. You know,
well, he's got his fashion.
Yeah, he does have that.
I think the only, like, aside from his little role in Anchorman 2...
Oh, so good.
The only other thing I think I've seen him act in, and not his own movie, was the Kobe Bryant Kobe System commercials.
Right.
And he did a good job there.
Yeah, the commercial with Robert Rodriguez is Kobe Bryant, too, so... He, like, sends his minions for a 5-on-1 basketball battle with Kobe Bryant. And then, like, tries to push Kobe Bryant, like, off a ledge and ends up getting blown up in a helicopter or something. It's all pretty great.
I mean, what do you guys think of his, as far as his clothing line? What do you guys, as real fans of the man, what's your honest opinion of those, like, that sackcloth he's got everyone wearing, those potato sacks?
I guess I don't have a huge problem with it. I'm more on board with his message and everything and what he's trying to get across with it. Because, I fully believe he commits himself to things and it sounds endearing and he sounds really passionate about it. I honestly don't have an opinion on the clothing, I guess. I mean,
are those clothes
I wear working out, but...
Yeah, are those clothes people would actually wear, or is he using fashion as, you know, like some sort of... you know, conceptual art where it's not meant for normal people to wear. It's meant to be seen on models and large groups.
I think that's the opposite of his message, actually. I think he wants it to be like something kids can wear in sort of, well, that's his message.
Yeah.
Very rich kids.
Yeah, that's...
Well, no, that's the point of it is...
Who want to look like hobos.
He has a 10-year plan and he wants to eventually like get it the price down. I mean, he's realistic. He can't just like connect with like the biggest fashion areas of the world, get on a New York art show and like produce these clothes that cost like $10 at Target. Like the goal is to make them affordable for people.
I don't know.
Nicki
Minaj has her clothes at Target.
Yeah, that's, I think it, I do think like, I don't know. I find the fashion interesting. I don't think it's anywhere. I don't think it should be being seen yet.
By anyone,
right. Like,
ever?
I feel like it would have been better for him if he had taken like a few more years of doing like behind the scenes things before releasing it. I think
this
is sort of like it would be like high school me putting stories on the internet or college me putting stories on the internet and being like, I'm not developed yet. It's but I do like the message, but I do think again it's creating controversy around him because he talks about like, we don't need brands, we need everybody to have things. And like, Travis, you're talking about the 10-year plan, but in the short term he's still sounding like hypocritical.
Sounding hypocritical if you take it at face value, but the point is to make the clothes cheaper, and the way he does that is by branding them, creating awareness and getting people on board with them so like they can eventually become affordable to people. I mean, I'm we can get it to like what they actually look like, like whether or not like he is being hypocritical, but I think ultimately the goal isn't hypocritical. So,
but I mean, until then, those moon boots he's hawking cost $1,000 or more,
right?
Yeah,
these boots.
Yeah,
Yeah, I got three pairs. And
do you really?
No. I don't own anything.
You know who has a couple pairs?
Who?
President Obama.
That's right.
He sent them to him.
Which I finally wanted to be president. I was just like,
can you imagine? Do you think Obama will ever wear those? I mean, imagine he came out in public wearing those.
I think he goes to sleep in them.
I mean, to me, they look like, you know, like slippers or Ugg boots or something. So
they're very Uggy.
Yeah,
they are very Uggy.
Yeah.
They're like if Uggs and the Back to the Future 2 sneakers had a baby.
Yeah, it would be awesome if they auto laced, or if they yelled at somebody to come tie them. That would be even better.
Yeah. In auto-tune.
Yeah. Well, what do you think is the most interesting thing that you've seen or heard of Kanye? Whether it's like a good interesting thing or a bad interesting thing, just the thing that draws your attention the most about him.
I don't know. I mean, I definitely feel like after writing this and doing some research, I definitely have at least a little better understanding of him as much as I can. And I'm not as dismissive right off the bat, or I'm not as hard on him, you know, being someone who doesn't really is not familiar with a subject and then will be just like, it's garbage. You know,
right.
I've kind of stepped back from that a little bit now that I know more.
Yeah, it doesn't convert you to like a huge fan, but at the same time, you're going to give more of the benefit of the doubt in ways that you can.
Yeah, it's just I've been, you know, after spending time with him or him as a character, you know, and then, you know, continuing, you know, and like promoting this book and stuff, it's kind of, he's become more important to me, you know, he's become a part of my life.
He is our lives. You know, that's actually what I wanted to mention was, I mean, for Chris and I especially, because we do this podcast, we analyze every word he's ever written down, we talk about things he does to the media, but he's such a present person. Everybody knows so much about him. They know what he sounds like. So, like, to read this book... Like, I can really see Kanye, like, doing these things. What Kanye would be doing these things.
Yeah, I mean, some of them, definitely.
I think that's
it's crazy.
Yeah, the most hilarious part about Kanye West's public persona is that none of this really seems, like, that fictional.
it doesn't seem too far-fetched.
Well, could you find yourself, like... continuing to use Kanye West as a character in other, like, literary...
I mean, a bunch, you know, people have said that. They're like, oh, you gotta write a sequel, he runs for president and all this stuff, but I mean, obviously I don't want to be the guy who just writes, you know, Kanye mashups. I do have higher literary aspirations.
To me, there's nothing higher, so I don't know.
And I don't know if there would be any other source material that would work as well. I mean,
you could make him the monster in Frankenstein.
I mean, I just feel like it would. Then I would just be jumping around like from book. Because, like I said, like for me, like this, the idea started out as a punchline because the name was similar, and then you know, as I was writing it, I kind of saw the parallel, so I wouldn't want to do something else then where the parallel wasn't as evident, you know. I would want to continue that trend.
Right, like you just
also, too, I would... This book is, like, from his beginning, basically, till just about the present. So if I wanted to write about him now from then on, I don't have as much real-life material to take from.
True.
I would have to wait a few years, maybe see what happens with his presidential bid and whatnot.
I just imagine, like, inserting Kanye into random stories and seeing what chaos unfolds. Like,
sure.
Like, Kanye in Great Gatsby.
And so, like, as a brand new character.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, I could see him fitting into that world, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's just in an argument with Gatsby the whole time.
Oh boy.
Well, and how any literary endeavors underway currently?
I've been focusing mostly on promoting this for the last, since it came out. It's been since sometime in September. It's been available, and I have a handful of short stories that have been published in print and online, and I got a couple more coming out in before the end of the year. And I think as soon as things settle down, I kind of just want to get back to, got a bunch of stories I'm working on, and I want to get those polished and get those out there. Cool. And then who knows, maybe sometime in the future, start thinking about a novel, and you know, a real non-Kanye novel.
I like to think all novels are in their own way a little Kanye.
Well, I mean, now he's a part of my life. It's going to be a bit of him and everything. So I don't know if I could avoid it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to have you on the team. Well, thanks for joining us for the interview.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, man, this was awesome. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people can get your book, Amazon, Kindle, right?
Yeah, on Amazon, the ebook and the paperback, barnesandnoble.com. They have it at Powell's in Portland, which is an awesome bookstore.
Powell's is
hopefully
awesome.
Hopefully a few other independent bookstores will be picking it up. So
awesome.
It's out there.
And it might be trying to find you and kill you. So
please let it.
Yeah. Let it devour you. Just stop struggling.
Should we give a shout out to whoever did the cover art? Because it's awesome.
Oh yes, absolutely. The art itself was done by Dyer Wilk. And he did an amazing job. I couldn't be happier with it. I really credit him with basically, like, the cover is 90% of what sells the book as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, you know, it's a high concept and it's funny. And I'm sure, you know, once people get reading, they'll enjoy it. But, like, just as far as, like, catching the eye and making people want it, like, The cover does it. The cover sells it. It's amazing, and I'm so happy with it. And the design of it was done by Matthew Revert, who does a lot of the design and cover work for Lazy Fascist Press and a bunch of other indie presses and even some higher profile people. And Yolo House Press, who put it out. It's Cameron Pierce of Lazy Fascist and Matthew Revert. And Molly Tanzer, who is the author of the book of Vermilion, and she's kind of like the resident Lovecraft. You know, she's the, as far as information is concerned, she's like the Lovecraft guru. So
yeah.
Those are the people behind it and who saw something in it and said, yes, we will put this into the world.
And Cameron's... Cameron's been doing a lot of good work with Lazy Fascist.
Oh, yeah. I love them. I mean, they put out so many interesting books. And, like, when I wanted to find someone to put this out, like, they were the first people I thought of. And I'm so happy that they're involved. And, yeah, I mean, it's a perfect situation as far as I'm concerned.
And funny enough, my book, the cover was done by Matthew Revert. So I didn't even realize until... we started talking that we had that connection.
Yeah, it's a small world.
Yeah.
Dude, and the connection of Loving Kind West.
And that one.
Yeah, well, I'm getting there.
Yeah, coming along. We'll send you some tracks. we'll make you a mixtape.
Only if it's, like, on cassette.
Oh, okay. Okay, we can do that.
Yeah. Travis, I'll let you do that.
Okay, great.
Great. All right, well... This is Watching the Throne. I'm Chris.
Travis.
And this was Josh joining us. And
such a weird way to end this. I don't think we've ever done this.
No.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Until we Kanye again. Goodbye.